Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's Intelligent Medicine. Intelligent Medicine, the program that brings you some of the best stories and most consequential news breaks in the field of integrative and complementary medicine. We bring you stories about vitamins, supplements, diet, exercise, all manner of stuff related to health. And this week is no exception. We got some great stories in store for you. And plus, we want you to participate. You can come directly into the doctor's office and pose a question to me. You can call us at 888-302-3684. Write the number down, 888-302-3684, this hour or next. And among the stories that we're going to be talking about, we're going to talk about a remarkable therapy for weight loss that involves something that, hey, it's right before our very eyes. It's a supplement that we've been using, but for an entirely different reason. Turns out it has a market effect on weight loss, coming up in just a few moments. 888-302-3684. And speaking of weight, we have just passed a very consequential milestone, because according to a new study, which was performed by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, in Atlanta, Georgia, the average American woman now weighs as much as the average 1960s man. Okay, so what's going on here? Another way to put it is that the average American woman now weighs more than I do. I clock in at, the latest is about 159 pounds. The average American woman now weighs 166.2 pounds. And that's exactly as much as the average American man weighed in the early 1960s. What's going on? Of course, there's an upward trend in weight for both sexes. Over this time period, which is, okay, 1960s, we're talking 50 years, right? Over the same time period, men gained nearly 30 pounds, from 166.3 in the 60s to 195.5 today. That's incredible. The average American man weighs about 195 pounds. So another way to put it, you can work these statistics in a variety of ways. Today's American man weighs almost as much as 1.5 American women from the 1960s, or at 195.5 pounds, put 5 American guys in a room, and you've gathered a half a ton of weight. The overall weight gain since 1960 is slightly greater for women. It's 18.5% than for men, which is 17.6%. And it's also a story of growing girth. The average American is 33 pounds heavier than the average Frenchman, 40 pounds heavier than the average Japanese, 70 pounds heavier than the average citizen of Bangladesh, who still are prey to caloric deprivation. It's one of the few countries in the world where the problem is still not enough food rather than too much food. 12.2 Americans are equivalent to 20 Bangladeshis. It's a lot of statistics here. The world's adult human beings added up to 287 million tons of biomass. But if every country had the same weight distribution as the United States, the world would be 58 million tons fatter. That's 20% fatter if everyone followed the trend. There's only two countries in the world that have heavier people than America, and they are in the Pacific Islands, the nations of Tonga and Micronesia, which are famous for exporting sumo wrestlers to Japan. You know, many champion sumo wrestlers in Japan, they're no longer Japanese. They come to Japan from Pacific Islands, where they grow to enormous weights. So, okay, what's the problem? A lot of things going on, you know, not enough exercise and too tempting foods, but here's part of the problem. The U.S. government is actually stoking a trend towards obesity, according to a recent study. They're feeding heart disease. They're fanning the flames of diabetes because they subsidize unhealthy foods. The U.S. government spends billions of dollars each year on subsidies to farmers, but for precisely some of the wrong foods. This according to a report in Journal of the American Medical Association. Current federal agriculture policies help underwrite the production of corn, soybeans, wheat, rice, sorghum, dairy, and livestock. All right, some of these agricultural crops are converted into refined grains and high-fat and high-sodium processed foods, and also all that leftover grain is used to fatten farm-fed livestock, corn-fed beef, pork, and poultry. And some of the excess corn is made into high-calorie juices and soft drinks. They're sweetened with high-fructose corn syrup, which is rendered unnaturally cheap because of agricultural subsidies. So the author of this study, Dr. Karen Siegel of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Atlanta, says, we know that eating too many of these foods can lead to obesity, cardiovascular disease, and type 2 diabetes, but the subsidies help keep the prices of these products down, making them more affordable in the U.S., which now leads the world in obesity statistics. Okay, when did this start? 1973. The 1973 U.S. Farm Bill was enacted to assure consumers a plentiful supply of food at reasonable prices. All right? So they wanted to, you know, didn't want Americans to go hungry. But look what happened since that era in terms of the weight of Americans. It's not good. So they did something interesting in this study. They looked at what people ate, and they assigned each individual a subsidy score based on the percentage of their total calories that had come from subsidized foods. So, for example, if you ate, bread or a muffin or corn on the cob, that would be subsidized. Cookies, soft drinks, these would be subsidized. But if you ate a broccoli or if you ate an apple, well, that wouldn't be subsidized. So here's what they found. Horrifying statistic. On average, people were getting about 56% of their calories from subsidized food commodities, which were rendered unnaturally cheap. Those with the highest scores in terms of subsidized food commodities were more likely to be obese, have a larger waist circumference, more C-reactive protein, which is a marker of inflammation, more bad cholesterol and higher blood sugar than those in the lowest subsidy scores, according to Journal of the American Medical Association. So, what about fish, beans, nuts, fresh fruits and vegetables? Well, those aren't subsidized. According to Dr. Raj Patel of the University of Texas at Austin, who wrote a commentary on this new CDC report, he says the government subsidies were a strategy to support rural communities and to manage hunger in the 1970s. It was supposed to be a win-win. You're subsidizing agriculture, and you're also feeding the populace. But they've been a terrible failure because the net result has been to undermine the health of Americans and to subsidize obesity and degenerative disease that leads to premature death increased cost of drugs and health care and a huge drain on the American economy. So what we need is more rational agriculture policies. Let's see if some of those senators and congressmen from those rural districts will allow these subsidies to lapse. You know, once they're enacted, it becomes a permanent entitlement. And what about the people who want the cheap food? They don't want to see the prices of their groceries go up because then expensive fruits and vegetables might seem like a preferable alternative to cheap crackers, cookies, muffins, and bread products, pizza, and the like. These are things that are supported by the government. Remember the initiative Government Cheese? We so overproduced dairy products that the surplus was bought up by the government and then distributed to, quote, poor people, disadvantaged individuals. But poor quality dairy products may not have been a great idea for the vast majority of people consuming them. Government cheese is part of the problem that is, and government soft drinks, high fructose corn syrup, refined bread products. These are some of the problems that have contributed to our current epidemic of obesity. 888-302-3684. We wait your phone calls. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here with the weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine.
Do you know there is a silent killer living among us? High blood pressure. It affects nearly 1 in 3 Americans and is a primary risk factor for stroke and heart attack. The CDC estimates that almost 20% of those with high blood pressure don't even know they have it. That's not surprising, since high blood pressure or hypertension is often symptomless. Research studies have shown that a daily dose of aged garlic extract can safely and effectively help to reduce blood pressure, as well as benefiting a number of other cardiovascular risk factors. And the most researched and highly respected aged garlic extract is all-natural Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Odorless and organically grown, Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract has been clinically tested to support blood pressure and cardiovascular health. So, along with getting your blood pressure checked regularly, get Kyolic Formula 109 for blood pressure and cardiovascular support today. Available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere.
You're listening to Intelligent Medicine, brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. You can find a lot more on Intelligent Medicine at drhoffman.com. Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine podcast and automatically get a new episode 5 days a week. And please rate and review the podcast on iTunes to help us spread the word about Intelligent Medicine. Also go to drhoffman.com and click on the store to buy your supplements via our convenient internet portal or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. Finally, become a patient at the Hoffman Center. I'll personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles you hear about on the radio show and podcast, or make an appointment with Layla Mudin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Thanks for listening and for helping to spread the word about Intelligent Medicine.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And this week in our newsletter, as mentioned in that little announcement, we feature an article on genetic testing. I personally underwent genetic testing. Your intrepid medical reporter has had his genes analyzed. And we share with you, you know, some of the ins and outs of genetic testing. And if you don't subscribe to the newsletter, you just go to drhoffman.com and read the article. But we have literally thousands and thousands of subscribers enjoying weekly infusions of health information right into their email box. All right, 888-302-3684 is our number, and our first caller comes from Wisconsin. Daniel, how you doing?
Hey, Doc. Nice to talk to you.
My pleasure.
I recently had gallbladder surgery.
Yep.
My pancreas got a little mad and out it come. gallbladder.
So you had an attack of pancreatitis.
Yes.
Okay.
This was my fourth attack.
So I think you needed your gallbladder out. Sounds
yeah,
like
I
it.
Needed it out. It's yep. out, and they didn't recommend any vitamins. What the gallbladder kept, and now it's gone.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about that. You know, so you don't really need a gallbladder, but you know, obviously, God and nature put it there for a reason. And some people have slightly more difficult time digesting fatty foods for at least a little while after surgery. So eating a low-fat diet may help under these circumstances. Of course, too much sugar is also not great because that gets converted to fat, can affect the pancreas. You got to eat light, L-I-T-E, you know, to protect your pancreas as well. Sometimes you get temporary diarrhea because the gallbladder is no longer there to regulate the flow of bile. The bile pours into your gastrointestinal tract and your small intestine, and this can lead to diarrhea for maybe a little while after surgery. Chronic diarrhea can occur in a small percentage of people. Again, a low-fat diet may help symptoms. Probiotics may help symptoms. Digestive enzymes may help symptoms. You may take some high lipase pancreatin, which is something that will help to digest fats. Because, you know, the gallbladder does perform a function. It doesn't produce the bile, but it sort of stores the bile. It's like a little reservoir. And the timing, it's not like you won't produce bile anymore, but the timing of the bile release in relationship to meals can get a little screwed up. The other problem that sometimes happens is that people get their gallbladder removed, and their indigestion wasn't, and pain wasn't related to the gallbladder. It's sort of like, oh, we thought the gallbladder was the culprit, but sometimes problems remain. It's not a, you know, panacea to get the gallbladder taken out. And then we have to take a look at diet. You know, what are you eating? Are you eating a diet that is, you know, laden with sugars, refined carbohydrates, things that cause bacterial overgrowth, gas, bloating, indigestion? Sometimes you need to be on a paleo-like diet or a FODMAP diet. FODMAP is something that we can talk about in a moment because there's a new study on the efficacy of a FODMAP diet to treat irritable bowel syndrome, a condition that afflicts tens of millions of Americans. We'll tackle that in a moment. 888-302-3684 is our number. And this is the weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
If you're interested in managing your blood pressure without medication, I have some exciting news about a new effective non-drug treatment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, here to tell you about the Zona Plus. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. It's so effective, it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. At least 22 clinical studies confirm regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in just 4 to 8 weeks. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 in free shipping. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And speaking of digestive disorders, as we did with the last caller, the FODMAP diet, or the low FODMAP diet to be precise, has been something that we've employed for years to treat irritable bowel syndrome. IBS can be a debilitating condition causing cramping, abdominal pain, bloating, gas, diarrhea, sometimes alternating with constipation. And it can really be life-impairing. It can affect one's work, sleep, and relationships. It's a big deal. Now they're coming up with powerful medications to treat it. But it can often be relieved with a low FODMAP diet. What does it stand for? The initials FODMAP stand for fermentable oligo, di, monosaccharide, and polyol diet. So each of the initials, O-D-M-A-P, stand for a category of fermentable foods, which can literally turn you into a gas factory. And sometimes you don't have to eliminate everything. You can, instead of eliminating the all the FODMAP foods, maybe it's the D's and the P's that are affecting you, and you can reintegrate some of the others. So it's not one monolithic diet. But a new study suggests that it really works. Well, we knew it works, but, you know, they have to do the study. And what they found was that over a six-week period, dietitians educated and tracked the progress of over 90 IBS patients. Approximately 50% of the patients followed a low FODMAP diet. The remainder were a control group. And what they found was that patients on the low FODMAP diet had major improvements of their abdominal pain. 50% of them improved, compared with only 20% of the control group. And there was also additional improvement in bloating, diarrhea, and stool urgency. And so it's a diet well worth trying. A lot of people get better with a gluten-free diet, but they're not really allergic to gluten. It's that gluten is a FODMAP. It's a fructan, which is the F in FODMAP. The diet excludes many compounds found in wheat, certain fruits and vegetables, garlic, onions, and sugar substitutes. So even foods that are healthy sometimes can be a problem. Some people say, I eat a high-fiber diet. I don't understand what you want. No, that's not the answer for a lot of folks, according to the FODMAP theory. So there are plenty of resources on the web where you can learn about the FODMAP diet, but it's often best to get custom advice from a nutritionally oriented health practitioner. All right, let's talk to Howard in the Bronx. How you doing?
Yes, doctor. I spoke to you about, it's near a year ago, and I have the Grover's disease.
And you survived. And you're here to tell about it, even after a year. The advice I gave you did not... Yeah, it worked.
I'm not doing too well. It keeps acting up so bad. I went to an acupuncturist and in Florida while I was there for 6 months, and she said she relieved heat out of the body by the acupuncture.
Yeah, there's a theory that sometimes too much heat can be dissipated with traditional Chinese medicine, with acupuncture techniques and herbs. Did you try the high dose vitamin A though?
And that, when you gave me that, told me to do that, I did it for a long time, and it got slightly better, but it just came back again. And the same thing with the acupuncture. It helped, and then it came back to the same problem again. So now I went to a chiropractor that specializes in Lyme disease and other things, and he's given me this, I got to spell it to you, CYTOMEGALOVIRUS, homeopathic.
I have no idea what that is. Alphabet soup.
It's a homeopathic.
Okay, so it's homeopathic, so I can't really weigh in on the efficacy of that. Sometimes complicated when you're talking about skin problems, you really have to look at the gastrointestinal tract. That's an important consideration. You have to change the diet. Did you make major diet changes, or did you kind of not?
I haven't done that yet.
That's key. That's really key. I think that a lot of times it's all too easy to prescribe a remedy, to say, take this vitamin or take this homeopathic thing or do, you know, take an herb. But I think that it's worth a trial, a fundamental change of diet, because that can be so beneficial. And where I would start is with something like a paleo diet that eliminates the common allergens, wheat, dairy, and perhaps even a trial of no grains whatsoever. This would be one vehicle for that is something I've been doing for several months now with, I think, great success because I really feel fantastic. The Whole 30 diet. So check it out on the web. Follow it. It's a challenge for 30 days. Stick to it. And I think you'll begin to see some resolution, because there's so many things that change in the body when you make a radical diet shift. It may be that you're having intolerance to certain foods, but you change your microbiome, which changes your inflammatory balance within the body. And that could be a huge component of your problem. I think we tend to cherry pick specific remedies, almost like we're looking at conventional medicine. Okay, well, if this medication doesn't work, maybe this vitamin will work, or high-dose vitamin D or high-dose vitamin A.
There's no magic bullet to this condition.
No, and that's one of the reasons why when patients come to the Hoffman Center, first we say, are you willing to make a radical diet change? Because we may ascertain that they need to make very fundamental diet change. Some people just want to take a vitamin or a pill, and that's not going to work.
Right.
Okay. And we also make it mandatory that patients see our nutritionist, Layla Mudin. And when, you know, when they come through my office and I ascertain what's going on medically, I prescribe a diet, and patients really have to follow a diet to achieve success sometimes with these challenging conditions. So that's where, that's, I think, the next
step
for you.
Thank you, doctor. I appreciate that.
And call me in a year. Call me next year, because it's a miserable condition. It's itchy, it's uncomfortable and unsightly, and, you know, it's nasty. Grover syndrome can be an ugly problem. 888-302-3684. Let's hear from Steve in Bergen County, New York, New Jersey.
New Jersey. That's a great show. I'm pretty active. I'm 66. I officiate four sports. I've been having some issues with my hip. I went to two doctors, quick to say hip replacement right away.
Wow.
They said there's arthritis. I mean, I don't doubt that. But I mean, I can still walk 4 or 5 miles. Can I referee basketball? Probably not at this condition. Are there other alternatives?
Yeah, you know, what I have to share with you is a little bit pessimistic, because what a lot of doctors say is, especially integrative doctors like myself, is that we can regenerate cartilage. We can make the cartilage grow again. We'll feed you hyaluronic acid. We'll feed you glucosamine with chondroitin. We'll inject, some SynVisc in there or stem cells, and we'll make everything grow back again, and you'll have cushions where, you know, it's bone on bone. But I have to share with you something that I find kind of thought-provoking. I read an article recently that suggests that joint cartilage can't renew. I mean, that's kind of a pessimistic message, but researchers have found that human cartilage rarely renews in adulthood, which suggests that joint diseases may be harder to treat than previously thought. What they do is a technique that's like radiocarbon dating. You know, like when they find fossil bones, they can actually radiocarbon date them to find if they're, 50,000 years old or 75,000 years old. They can do it with a certain amount of precision. Well, they can actually do radiocarbon dating with people who are alive and in the current era, and what they found was that there really was not a lot of potential for joint regeneration. So there you have it. 888-302-3684. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Howard Garrett, the Dirt Doctor here, president of the Texas Organic Research Center. As you probably know, it's a toxic world out there, but we can do something about it. Become knowledgeable consumers and use products that are safe and healthy, such as natural supplements that help protect the body's cells from toxic exposure. One of my favorites is Reg Active with ME3, the only probiotic proven to actually produce glutathione in the body. It's the body's master antioxidant, unique in its ability to repair and rebuild cellular damage caused by free radicals and exposure to environmental toxins. Glutathione decreases as we age. Reg Active is great for rebuilding it, and I strongly recommend it.
Look for Reg Active at Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide where Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are sold. Revolutionary. Remarkable. Reg Active.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. Let's talk to Dave in Iowa. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call, Doc.
Sure,
hey,
Dave.
I think I'm the one that was called in about all this food trying to taste the same. It had a chemical in it.
Yeah.
When I drive in Iowa down past the hog place, you can smell the same stuff that it tastes, the food.
A lot of big hog farms out by you.
Well, yeah, they're all over here. I'm thinking about just leaving Iowa and go find some place, you know, come out to New York where the food's good, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, but it doesn't always smell that great here because, you know, on a day when it's like 92, like the other day, they leave the garbage out on the sidewalk too long because it takes so long to collect the garbage and it piles up and it piles up and it smells like an Iowa hog farm here in New York City. So, you can't get away.
I can hold my nose.
You'll need a clothespin.
Yeah. Hey, the problem was, I've kind of been vindicated because I've heard other people talking about, I mentioned it to them that the food all tastes kind of the same chemical in it, you know, no matter what they eat. And, they tell me that it's some kind of chemical in a plastic, you know, the packaging.
Yep.
And I don't know if that we can verify that, but I don't know what kind it is. They're giving me blood tests. I've lost another 2 pounds since I talked to you. And all the food that I eat, most all of the food that I eat, has that taste to it. And I know it's not my taste buds going crazy, okay, or something like that, because everybody said that, yeah, you're right, David, but we can't taste for other people. See, taste
is
kind of like an individual.
You have a disorder of taste and smell. Somehow things are starting, you're getting like weird signals, almost like olfactory tinnitus, you know, like in the ears, sometimes you're ringing in your ears, you're getting kind of like some intrusive chemical taste, which suggests that either really there is a chemical that's built up in your body, or maybe not. Maybe you've got some distortion of your taste and smell, which is a neurological disease. It could be due to toxicity. It could be due to some sort of disorder. It's hard to track these things down. So, I don't know exactly what's going on with you. I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, you can damage your olfactory nerve with certain exposures. You can damage your taste buds, especially if you take certain antibiotics. They're actually notorious for causing alterations in taste. And as people age, sometimes they just get changes in that. So, it's tough to say. Although, you know, you're on the right track because there's a story this week that there are a number of chemicals, not to mention mercury and lead, and what are called gender benders or xenobiotic chemicals that are found in many plastics, cosmetics, and food containers that endanger child brain health. So there was a new report, a bunch of scientists and health practitioners and children's health advocates got together, and they're calling for renewed attention to the growing evidence that many common and widely available chemicals endanger neurodevelopment in fetuses. That's a problem for pregnant moms, but also for young children. So, you know, we got a lot of junk in the environment. We have a lot of additives to food. You know, folks make the mistake of buying stuff in plastic containers and then nuking it in the microwave and thus encouraging leaching of chemicals. We've got all kinds of problems. The report's entitled Project Tender, Targeting Environmental Neurodevelopment Risks. It appears in the latest. Go ahead.
Because they're making all this food so quickly, you know, and they're feeding like, you know, billions of people, and the food processing is just like going crazy. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable how much food they put out a day in the United States.
Part of the problem is what they've done is they've actually shortened the growing time for a lot of animals. They stoke them up with super nutrition, and sometimes growth factors and antibiotics also increase growth. And as a result, the food doesn't have a chance to mature. So you get tasteless chicken, you know, rubber chicken, and you get tasteless foods that require a lot of additives to make them tempting and tasty. Whereas in the past, you just used to put pepper and salt on a chicken and throw it in the oven at 350, and there you had it, you know, tasty dish. So you're right about that. All right.
Yeah,
so,
all right, spit it out, you know, because it's in the pork and the chicken here. It's real heavy, you know.
You ought to know because you're from Iowa, and that's a place where there's a lot of, you know, these agribusiness and super farms. All right, let me get to this subject because I promised to talk about a remarkable nutrient that is right before our very eyes, easily accessible, commonly used, that has a very profound effect on weight loss. And this is a surprise because this is a nutrient that is used to support sleep. It's melatonin. So we know melatonin helps to regulate the circadian rhythm. It's secreted by the pineal gland, which is located within the brain. But it also appears to have a positive effect on body weight and energy metabolism. And here's a little known fact. Melatonin is secreted at a rate 400 times higher in the gastrointestinal tract than in the brain. And therefore, there's some studies that suggest that melatonin taken at or near bedtime can be very helpful for GERD, gastroesophageal reflux, or heartburn. Many studies support its benefits in terms of gastrointestinal health. Well, here's another benefit. Melatonin may have a positive effect on body weight and energy metabolism. So what they did is a double-blind placebo-controlled study. They looked at 81 postmenopausal women, and that's a group that certainly has some challenges when it comes to weight maintenance, right? Women often gain all that weight. They start to look matronly after menopause. So they were given 1 year of treatment with melatonin or placebo, and the amount of melatonin was reasonable amount, 1 to 3 milligrams nightly. They measured their body composition. Measures were obtained at baseline and after 1 year of treatment, along with hormones related to weight, leptin, adiponectin, and insulin. And what they found was, in response to treatment, fat mass decreased in the melatonin group by 6.9% compared to placebo. Whoa, I'll take 6.9% reduction in fat mass. I'll take that any day. There was also a significant increase in lean mass of 5.2% in the melatonin group. After adjusting for what's called BMI, body mass index, lean mass increased by 2.5% in the melatonin group. The adiponectin, which is a hormone that governs appetite, increased by 21% in the melatonin group, thus suggesting that it could help with satiety. And the researchers conclude there's a possibly beneficial effect of melatonin on body composition and lipid metabolism. As 1 year of treatment reduces fat mass, increases lean body mass, and is associated with a trend towards an increase in adiponectin, which is known to control appetite. Good stuff. Okay, Google is starting a new initiative because, you know, you jump on Google and you try to analyze a symptom, and what you find is sometimes something alarming. So, for example, when you look up stomach hurts, a regular search reveals that you might have diverticulitis, that you might have colon cancer, that you might have an obstruction. The new Google search is more benign. They tend to be less alarmist. They tend to be less encouraging to something called cyberchondria, which is a variant of hyperchondria. People go on the net, they look stuff up, and they start worrying. The new answer when you do a symptom search on stomach hurts is constipation, gas, overeating, stress, or muscle strain. Certainly a more benign menu of potential medical mayhem options than that you have a hole in your stomach or cancer. 888-302-3864. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.